I'll go ahead and call us to order for the regular, well, it's not actually the regular schedule, we're a week late. Story County Board of Health, Tuesday, June 9th. It looks like we're going to be down. I don't think Glenda was coming at all today, was she? And then Dr. Kluge may be late or may not be here at all. So but we've got a quorum, so we can continue. The next item on our agenda is the consent agenda. All items listed on the consent agenda will be enacted by one motion. There'll be no separate discussion, so if you guys want to look through that, and I'll take a motion to approve.
So moved.
Second.
Got a motion to approve the consent agenda. Any further discussion? Passion?
Aye.
Speck?
Aye.
Toot? Aye. The consent agenda has been approved. That takes us down to public forum. This is the time for members of the public to offer comments concerning matters not scheduled to be heard before the Board of Health. Not seeing anybody moving towards the mic. Agency and departmental reports. First is Micah. You'll have to share the microphone.
Yeah, we will.
We're in the process of getting new ones, though, so.
That's what I hear.
I think by the next Board of Health meeting, we'll have new microphones.
Good afternoon. I'm Gloria Simons. I'm the Health Services Director for Mid-Iowa Community Action. As you know, we have many health services that we provide in the Story County area. And rather than go through all of them, I've left you some brochures about the maternal and child health programs. And CCNC, which is, I think, maybe a program that you may be less familiar with, so I thought I would take some time and explain what that program is. We have a registered nurse who is a child care nurse consultant. And, Paul, you may be somewhat familiar with this because it's funded through Boost. Now, the child care providers, this is a voluntary program, although there are some state incentives to participate in a quality rating system, which part of the role of the child care nurse consultant is to help with that process. And what they do is go into a child care provider facility, whether it's a center or a home or a preschool, and do an assessment. And they're rather extensive assessments. One in particular is on health and safety, and it goes through everything from the things we know most readily, which is the outlet plugs and those kinds of things, to the level of material on your playground, to recalled equipment, recalled toys. Are there blankets and pillows in the cribs? How are you disinfecting the changing table or the lunch tables? So there are many areas that they cover with the provider. Now, it's a voluntary program, and at the end of these reviews, they come up with a plan. And as you know, child care is not a money-making proposition. So there are providers that struggle with how can they invest in making the changes required to improve their quality. So our nurse consultant helps them find grants and funds to take care of the things they need to do and to set priorities so that the biggest concerns are taken care of first. They also work closely with the licensing consultants so that if there is a big issue, then we call them to come out and take a look. The nurse consultant is also available by phone. So if you're a provider and you're, you get information about, say, disinfectants, which ones. There was a company from California trying to sell disinfectants to child care providers, and they will call the child care nurse consultant, and they will give them the latest and greatest information available about those things. So, or child records. They'll do a child record review. Are the immunizations up to date? Are consents in place? Do kids with special needs have plans? If they don't have plans, how do you get one? So those are the kinds of things that a child care nurse consultant can do. But it is voluntary, And we do have limited time, but Boost has been very generous, and we continue to provide services throughout Story County. And this person hooks them up with all the other services that we provide, maternal and child health, WIC, and provides information to families as well as the providers.
So say I'm a daycare, and I call you in,
mm-hmm.
okay, to take a look. Do you charge?
We don't charge.
Okay. And so you come in and look at my daycare, and I make some the improvements you suggest. Do I get a stamp of approval? Do I get anything that I can put on our little sign on the outside?
You get it's misleading because it's hard to get a complete approval of a health and safety review because they're so extensive. What you will have is a plan, and then you get so long to make improvements. Usually it's about 2 years because it takes that long. And then when you come back, you get to move up on the quality rating system, which is through the state, and there are some incentives for that.
And so there are, like, a stamp that you can advertise on? Or
you can advertise.
I guess I'm kind of thinking, what would be my incentive as a daycare provider to have someone come in and tell me everything I'm doing wrong unless I can say, well, I've made these corrections.
Yes.
Well, I know they should do it, though, because it's the right thing to do.
Right.
But in reality, so can I say I am MICA approved or?
No, you get a level of quality of the Q. It's called QRS. And the top level is 5. So you can say I have a level 3, I have a level 4.
Or level
getting
5.
To a level 5 is a stretch, especially for some of the home providers.
How many kids do I have to have in my child care to be eligible for this?
No eligibility requirements.
So if I see my neighbor's kid.
Yeah, I don't know if you're going to want to go through the trouble if you're just seeing your neighbor's kid. But we've never refused anybody.
So as a child care provider now, is there anything that's required of them to assure someone bringing their child there that they are kind of up to standards or not?
I guess if you're a certified home, there's some standards, but there are many homes that are not certified. And
there's no state requirement for a child care facility?
To be certified or licensed.
To be certified, there is. And to be licensed.
Right, there are requirements there, but you're not required to be certified or licensed.
Right, and you're not required to be licensed.
You aren't?
No.
Really?
But if you are certified and licensed, I do know there are requirements.
Yes, if you're licensed and certified, there are requirements. But if you're not, no.
Are most child care, are they most of them are certified or not?
I don't have that
information. You don't have that information?
And just to give you, and I also left you a little WIC brochure. It tells you where we have our clinics and a number you can call. The big news about WIC is it's going to go to electronic cards rather than vouchers, which will be a huge difference. They're also, I understand, going to be an app so that when you're in the grocery store, you can determine whether the item you're putting in your cart will be WIC approved. Because I don't know if you're familiar with the WIC voucher system. They are very specific. They're very specific on the kind of bread, the number of ounces, the kind of cereal, the number of ounces, the kind of bread, milk, and ounces, and the same with the eggs. So in the past, families have struggled because they fill their cart up to get to the counter and realize nothing they put in there is approved. So it's frustrating for the person checking. It's frustrating for the family. So we're moving in the right direction of making it simpler for families. So it's being piloted in 2 other agencies, not ours. I don't know when the start date is for our 8 counties. But we're really looking forward to it because they also will automatically add the additional monthly allowance rather than having to come in and getting a new set of vouchers. So, and I'd like to introduce our new first five site coordinator, Megan Thompson. Dr. Passion, I know you might know Megan from referrals, but I will turn it over to Megan.
Well, I just have a brief overview, I guess, the first five, if you're not familiar with it. We promote healthy mental development in kids 0 to 5. So we partner with clinics, McFarland, Story Medical Clinic, and Unity Point in Huxley. And we, providers, will refer children for anything from speech and hearing, developmental concerns, social stressors in the family that's affecting their growth or development. And then we'll take those referrals and we'll refer them, get them connected to resources in the community that will help them and their family. And we follow up with them based on their needs. It could be weekly, biweekly, every month, whatever their needs are. And then we will get back to providers and let them know what's going on. So when they see them at their next visit, they have an idea of if that child is receiving AEA services or what's going on with them. So since the beginning of the year, we've had about 35 referrals in Story County. And from those referrals, we've made around 60, 65 additional referrals into the community for everything from financial assistance, food pantries, clothing, dental, lots of daycare, Head Start, and AEA referrals.
So you're staying busy.
Yes. Yes, we are.
Yeah.
A concierge service for services in Story County.
Yeah, there you go. Thank you.
I'm Carly Beam, and I'm the Eye Smile Coordinator at MICA. And every county has an Eye Smile Coordinator, and I have five counties that I cover. And our big gig is the school audit, dental audits, which we just completed. And all the children going into kindergarten and into ninth grade are required to have a school dental screening. And at kindergarten, it can be done by a school nurse as well as a dental hygienist or a dentist or a PA or a doctor. And then going into high school, it has to be either a dentist or a dental hygienist. And that kind of one of the things that it does is it also there's urgent care and needs obvious care. And so then it lets us know the kind of status of the children in the school district. And then also we do screenings and varnishes to Head Starts and early Head Starts, and we now expanded to be able to do that to private daycare centers. And then this summer we're partnering with United Way in Story County, and we're doing a lot of enrichment programs as well. And then there's over 365 kids that are signed up for their enrichment programs, and we'll be seeing those children with dental education. And if we have consents, we can do screenings and varnishes. And the screenings are really only as important as the referral and the care that we coordinate. So then we try to find a dentist, a dental home for them, and then ways to cover their dental care. So, yeah.
Very good. Thank you.
Thanks.
That will take us to Youth and Shelter Services.
That's right. The largest email I've ever had in my life. 175 pages.
Close enough. Maybe over 100. You lose me at about the third page.
Like what she emailed us, and I got it up on my
I didn't bring it up.
Okay, good afternoon. There's a couple things. You've already received the email of, what'd you say, 175 pages? Yeah, there'll be a quiz on that later. But wanted to bring you up to speed on a few of the things that we are doing and some of the information that we have recently received. So the school year has finished at long last, and now we're into our summer programming, and there's a couple things of note with that. YSS is involved in three, for lack of a better term, feeding programs in Story County. We have one in Nevada, My understanding is an open program, so anyone can come. And that is 4 days a week, I believe. And then we have two in Ames, one that is an open program that happens at a church, another one that is a closed program that happens at the middle school, and that is in conjunction with summer school there. So if you're part of that, you've had a special invite that says we'd really like you to come to summer school, and then we'll feed you, and then we would really like you to stick around for the afternoon. And I helped with that last week. We had about 22 youngsters, 23, 5th through 8th grade. And so they put us through our paces, I thought. We had a good time. And they're doing that again this afternoon. And that will go through the first week in July. So there are those. And as part of the feeding program at the church, we are partnering with the Ames Police to come a couple days a week and interact with the kids as well over lunch. And so we think that's a win-win. We also are involved, or we're wrapping up at the end of June, a program that we're doing with the Ames Police and the Story County Sheriff's Department, where they are doing compliance checks. And that is a special grant through the Iowa Department of Public Health on top of the grant that we usually have that provides extra monies for them to do compliance checks in whatever establishment they decide to do. So we've gone through 1-2 rounds with the Ames Police, and they're working on another round, and I'm probably going to get the figures on Story County next week. But those seem to be very successful. And the rule with that is if they checked you once, you had to go back a second time. So to make sure that, you know, people don't think you're just coming around once and that's the case. But those, the first round, there was a reduction in the second round. So that was promising. What you have in front of you is a few pages of 175 of the Iowa Youth Survey, which the county numbers came out at the end of April, I think. And I just wanted to make note of a few. As you can see, the Iowa Youth Survey started 30-plus years ago, probably, with pretty simply with a few questions saying, hey, kids, do you drink? How much do you drink? How often do you drink? Do you think your friends drink? And, of course, it has mushroomed since then because now we've invented new drugs that young people might be involved in. But it also asks a number of other questions that that have to do with a young person's safety and their perception of safety. So some of these questions are, yes, does this happen or doesn't it? Some of them are their perception. And young people operate off of their perception. So usually if they think their friends are drinking more, then you tend to see use go up because it becomes like a permission. If everybody around me is doing it, it becomes a social norm. So you always look at those kinds of numbers together. What I've given you are the Story County numbers that speak to actual current and ever use. Those are the first couple pages that you have. And I apologize, it comes in a PDF, and I tried to get it a copy on a flash drive, and it just wasn't pretty. So, but I would refer you to that if you so choose to read those 175 pages. And then you have the others that speak more to detail. And one of the things that I think was interesting in some of the detail in the pages towards the back are what young people are drinking. And it looks like they are enjoying more shots than they are wine at this case, in this situation. So that was interesting. I noticed also that some of the figures don't make us look great, that the figures have gone with drinking. They have gone up a few percent from 2012 among 11th graders. Just start with that. But with marijuana, it has actually gone down. And that was sort of a surprise because the perception of harm has gone down with marijuana as well, which brings us to a second round of things. Oh, so to just give you an example, the perception of harm in 2012 for alcohol, those young people, there's sort of four categories you can go with, like not at all, slight risk, moderate risk, very great risk. And with alcohol, when you talk about great risk, you're doing the moderate to great. 85% of 11th graders in 2012 considered drinking alcohol to be a great risk. That's only 80% in 2014, so that's gone down. Marijuana was 78. It's gone down to 64. They didn't look at risk for, or I don't have the figures for risk for over-the-counter drugs in 2012, but in 2004 it was 86%, and prescription drugs using something that is not prescribed to you was 84%. So those numbers are troubling, and that I would like that to be a lot higher with those. One of the things that we do to compare these to other numbers is we look at the Monitoring the Future survey every year. The Iowa Youth Survey comes out every other year. But the Monitoring the Future looks at young people across the country, and they look at availability, which is one of the reasons that we do that with, or the perception of availability, with the Iowa Youth Survey. The Iowa Youth Survey questions sort of mirror that. So we can look at national figures and look at our figures as well. So it looks at risk, it looks at disapproval by parents and or peers, and it looks at availability. And then it looks at actual use. Now, this is sort of, I think, interesting. Prevention is really about two things. You're trying to prevent the event from ever happening in the first place, and or you're trying to mitigate harm should it, like in case somebody falls through the cracks. So if kids are drinking, you at least try and prevent binge drinking. So you look at those different things and you put them into sort of a Venn diagram. So with risk, you know, what makes it more likely that somebody is going to essentially run with scissors? You know, you would not let your two-year-old run with scissors. Well, drugs are sort of like scissors for a teenage brain. So with risk, the thing that tends to influence whether that risk is more, they perceive it as being risky, is the information they get, the education they get, what they observe going on, and also what in the culture reinforces that. Are there rules or regulations that say that this is not something that somebody should do? What they know and what they believe are sometimes two different things, though, because a teenage brain doesn't calibrate risk in the same way that an adult brain does. They sort of hedge their bets a little bit. They think they're going to win the jackpot. So with disapproval, again, it's information and education, but also implied consent. You know, do they think that somebody thinks it's probably okay? Have the parents had an actual discussion? So we always encourage parents to actually have a discussion where they give express disapproval of that behavior. So it's consent or not. And, again, policies that reflect whether the culture as a whole disapprove of that. So if we say you can't, you know, within school, your good conduct policy influences that disapproval as well. And then availability, one of the things that you're going to see in the IWU survey is, you know, where did you get it? Did you get it from friends? Did you get it from family? It looks like a significant, certainly a fair amount of young people get it from home, from their parents. And I know that from doing substance abuse evaluations, I hear that as well. Usually it's from a friend or an older relative, but sometimes parents have it available as well. So, but also with availability enforcement. And again, is there a belief that enforcement's going to happen? So the compliance checks that we're doing in Story County right now are a very large part of that perception of availability. Am I likely to get arrested? Will those things be enforced? So not only, you know, do we have rules, but do we hold those rules up? Am I likely to get caught? And then when you see risk go down, the perception of risk go down and the perception of disapproval go down, use goes up, and that seems to be despite what the actual availability is. So those things always come into play. It's always sort of a interesting and complicated Venn diagram that we see then as results in the Iowa Youth Survey as to whether use actually goes up or down. So when you're looking at those 175 pages and memorizing those, you'll see, and I think those are the pages that speak to perception of harm are like page 61 through 65, and you don't have copies of those, but if you're looking at those sections, they really speak to the different kinds of risk that young people are perceiving that a given drug would have for them should they use it. So just to bring that to your attention.
So when you read this latest report, were you encouraged or discouraged compared to the one prior?
We need to keep working. You know, I think in some ways, people often say to me, well, do kids really take the IWU survey very seriously? Or, you know, kids are not going to. It's anonymous. And if they're not taking it seriously, they all take it not seriously together because the percentage points go up or down about 1, 2, 3% every 2 years. So they're all getting together and answering the same thing pretty consistently. So one of the discouraging things is the fight you have to do with the culture in terms of what it is perceived. So, for instance, the e-vaping thing. There's a lot of that advertising on TV, and that's not regulated. So that sends a message that there is no harm. If it is being done more in the culture, that implies less harm. Same thing with quote-unquote medical marijuana. If it is implied that it is medicine, then it is also implied that it is safe. And that's a big fight to take on, because there's really big money behind both of those. So when you have free speech in the form of advertising, you're really up against a pretty big message that's hard to get around. So getting a counter message out, which we know works, but we don't have the same kinds of wherewithal to take out a $1 billion ad on TV that says the opposite. So we're not going to throw our hands up.
Do you read the most recent National Geographic? They had a very nice article on marijuana.
Yes. Somebody left it in the office, and I haven't had a chance to look at it yet. But it does speak,
nice,
I thought.
Well-written or?
No, it's well-written. I actually think, you know, I'm not a big fan of medical marijuana, but they bring up some really very, very interesting points about it and how much more we have to learn on it. And but it's a very interesting article. It doesn't talk about drug use with marijuana, but
no.
It talks about other uses of marijuana and how complex of a plant it is and how we have no idea why marijuana does what it does.
It's got 426 chemicals. You would hope that something in there would be useful,
yeah.
And some of them are, but when you use it in a smokable form, you also have the hallucinogenic properties. So we know it does some other things, but...
Yeah, the most fascinating thing about it is when they have, it was pregnant rats or something, or when they take a lot of THC during pregnancy, the babies that are born are phenomenally anxious, and they can't get along with the other rats, and they obviously have social damage to their developing brain. That in and of itself, to me, was very fascinating.
Mm-hmm.
Anyways, I get a lot of my science from National Geographic.
I'm now inspired to read the rest of the article. Any other questions?
No, ma'am.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you. Next, Story County Public Health, Eileen Mullen, for the last time.
Sad but true. Eileen Mullen, Public Health. And I do thank you for all the meetings we've had together, and it's been quite a journey. Start out with talking a little bit about China HIP, which is a Community Health Needs Assessment and Health Improvement Plan. As you recall, every 5 years, the county is to do some kind of a community needs assessment. And so 2015, we will have that done by the end of 2015. In the past, Story County has done a great job in raising enough money to do a formal community health needs assessment. And through this process over the last 10 years, we've also created SQALA, Story County, which is Story County Quality of Life Alliance. And that alliance is made up of coalitions that are interested in healthcare, social services, the county in general, as well as organizations. And so this year, because we have become I guess you'd say we've made an impact of working together and know how to work together. We decided not to do a formal needs assessment this year, but we're doing an informal one. So what that means is over the last 5 years, our coalitions have worked together to identify what are the greatest needs in the county. And then if you look at the county health rankings between what our coalitions have seen as the greatest need and what the county health rankings have said as the greatest need, they have complemented each other. So what we're doing right now is we've identified the three big picture priorities, which is access to health care. And within that, subcategories would be dental, after-hours care, and mental health crisis services. The other one, large picture one, is healthy behaviors. And under that, there's three things we've identified as a priority would be exercise and physical activity, alcohol consumption, and healthy food choices / hunger issues. The third priority would be poverty and income level. And with that, we have subcategories of transportation, affordable housing, livable wage, and affordable child care and after-school and summer programs. So now the coalitions are all taking What they're doing is pulling together, letting us know, the leadership group, which of these items they're working on. And from that, we'll identify two or three things that we're going to say the county itself is saying is their priority. And so we'll put some action plans together based on that. So Kyle will be reporting out what those are in the very near future. And by the way, I will introduce Kyle Brees as the new community home health, hospice, and public health administrator, effective Friday afternoon at 1 o'clock. So I think next you have in front of you the financial report. What I want to point out this year is that under healthy aging on the first page, and this is by the end of April 30th, we have 50% of our grant dollars spent. We used to not have any trouble spending this, but we will not be able to spend it all this year. The only thing that we can attribute this to, and I don't know if Heather has seen this in other counties or not, but with more people getting insurance that used to not have insurance, they now are coming and they have insurance. So they cannot, though, afford the high deductibles that are going with some of their insurances. So our grant dollars used to go towards those people who had no insurance. They now have insurance, but they're denying coming into our service because they can't afford to pay the high deductibles. I mean, we're guessing on some of this just because of some of the stuff that's happened. I don't know what you see in your offices or anything, but we find it kind of odd that we don't have the people to use it on. So we're coming up with ways that we can start beating the doors down and using making sure we use these dollars in the future, unless the criteria changes over time.
So if they have insurance, they can't use you at all?
They wouldn't meet the needs of this.
So you're saying they have such a high deductible. Wouldn't that be more so to use you rather than?
I think what happens then is, if I understand it correctly then, is that if I have a high deductible, let's say it's, I don't know, $5,000, $10,000, that could be high to a lot of people, I have to spend that before my insurance comes into place. So let's say they have, this is the way I understand it, correct me if I'm wrong. So then if they need our care and they've only spent $200 so far into their health insurance plan, then they've got to spend, $9,000 more. And they're choosing, and actually I've heard this from some physician offices, they're choosing not to go with the prescribed treatment plan because they really don't have the dollars to put into that. So they got the health insurance, not really understanding this high deductible thing.
That's out of their pocket, that deductible.
It's out of their pocket.
They can't afford that to pay
that.
So why wouldn't they?
So that's kind of the way I'm seeing things, but I'm not.
Use your services where it wouldn't cost them anything to get what they need.
At this point in time, they have to be not. You want to speak to this at all, Heather? You probably can answer this a lot better.
I don't think they can.
That doesn't make sense.
I'm Heather Bombi with the Iowa Department of Public Health. I'm the Regional Community Health Consultant. So with the state grant dollars, the local public health services contract, in Iowa code, it says that we are the funder of last resort. So if an individual has insurance, then they have to utilize the benefits through that insurance coverage before they are eligible for the state grant.
But if they can't afford to pay the deductible, then they don't get anything.
Right.
If, you know, I guess I'll jump in. I don't know what the future will hold, but if it continued to go this way, maybe the state would change their criteria. And it could pay for high deductibles. Yeah.
It is really tough at the department. We continue to have that conversation about how much tax dollars are going to be spent on a mandated on a mandate for folks to have insurance, but in this situation, they can't afford it. So are they just going to pay the fine of not having insurance? And then, and right now, the way that it is, then they can get the services of our state grant. It's complicated and convoluted.
No wonder the people out there can't figure out what to do. They don't know.
The other issue with Story County is that Mary Greeley Home Care gets a lot of funding from asset that most other counties don't receive. And so I think that that really impacts the amount of local public health services dollars that they utilize within Story County. So with those funds, Mary Greeley Home Care chooses to use those funds at the beginning of the year before they use our state grant. So those patients wouldn't have the same criteria as what our state grant has. So if they chose to take those patients on and use those asset dollars, they could do that. The only thing is, for the patient, is that really the best for them? Because then they're never going to meet their deductible anyway. What if they have a catastrophic event? You know, that's their insurance policy.
But most insurance don't cover what you guys do here under this healthy aging. What type of service is that that you're giving? Is that an in-home care thing, right?
Yes.
But most healthcare and policies are, and they don't cover that anyway, do they? Unless
many,
you go to a clinic or a doctor or a hospital?
No. Many insurance companies cover nursing visits and home care aide visits when a personal care is required. What insurance companies don't pay for is the homemaker piece of it, with environmental tasks, cleaning the immediate environment and laundry and those types of things, which then they could get the services through our grant because there's no, it's not a benefit that's offered under their insurance.
Thank you.
So on the other funding sources, disease outbreak, we can, you know, that there's no issues there. We'll continue to use that money we've had. One thing I want to point out on disease outbreak is that we're seeing an increase in active TB. And so we have a case right now. We've had three or four here in since October, and that's a pretty high amount for what we've usually seen. So therefore, that requires us going into the home, doing a little bit more surveillance and oversight to make sure they're taking their medications. And then on the last page is the emergency preparedness dollars. Again, CBS Helps is the acronym for our coalition with Boone and Story. And so PHEP is Public Health Emergency Planning, and HPP is the hospital planning monies. We each get our own dollars, but we as a coalition work together on how we should spend it. At the end of April, the remaining balance is halfway down, and all of us will have all those monies spent. That's we have it slated, and it's being taken care of. Story County, we have used it to enhance our infrastructure with technology so that we're able to, wherever we're at in the county, we're going to be able to access all of our data and for if there's an emergency and we need to get files and communicate and so forth. So we're working with Mary Greeley's IT department to make that happen. And last is what the nurses have been doing. And you have a copy of that for some of the breakdown. Oh, it's, I guess, emergency preparedness. They are doing a volunteer management exercise in a couple weeks. We had to stop doing immunization billing because of just wording problems and so forth, and we're now back in billing. So next fall, if you still want to use us for anything, we can bill for all of our immunizations now, and we don't charge the office price. So I'm not trying to take away from you guys in the clinic, but for those who need that. Oh, I think that's probably about, mental health clinics. So, you know, we've been for years doing the mental health clinics on Wednesdays for those court-appointed or special needs. And now with Optime, formerly Community Life Program, coming on board, we will be ending that as of July 1st.
What type of injections were you giving there for them?
Various.
Various?
Haldol.
And they were people who needed it very badly. Yeah. So they required oversight. Any questions?
Eileen, I just want to say I appreciate all the work you've done. We're going to miss you, I'm going to miss you, and I really liked working with you.
So we'll all miss you.
I appreciate that. Thank you.
Well, I couldn't speak for everyone because we didn't have a meeting beforehand. But we did. We always appreciated working with you and stuff.
Thank you.
So, and good luck in retirement. I'm sure we'll see you around.
I'll force my artwork on you.
Yeah, that's right. That's right.
Thanks, Eileen. And next, Story County Environmental Health, Margaret James.
Margaret James, Environmental Health. Were you all going to vote on this arsenic thing? Because I need an opinion from the board. So was that on the agenda, Kristen? Is that later, afterwards? Okay. So I thought it was before this, an additional item. Okay. I'll come back to this then. Let's see. Septic numbers. We are a little down compared to the previous year, by far, actually. We're halfway through the year, and we're not nearly half of what we did in 2014. No explanation for that. Well inspections and well permits. We've done only 8 well permits this year, 2 of which were water, 13 inspections, 34 water tests, only 1 well rehab, and 8 well plug-ins. Out of that, grants to counties, we still have $17,000 available. We'll spend some of that down. At the end of the year, we always get quite a few, under the gun to get plugged. But we won't spend our grant money. Nothing that we can really do to control that. The arsenic talk, that'll help pare down these numbers a little bit. For the lead inspection, the board decided to go ahead and not reapply for the grant money. So I still have 8 open cases. The most recent EVL case will begin their HUD lead remediation later this week. And so that's a wonderful benefit to that family and to this county. And then also lots of times that will be advertising, so we might get a few more people interested in that. They do not necessarily have to have a lead poison child in the house to qualify for that program. And I did send out letters notifying all the open cases that they will be transferred, the management will be transferred from Story County to IDPH. Kevin Officer will be handling that. For the pool tattoo tanning program for 2015, we recently concluded all our pool inspections. Matt and Kathy, how many were closed this year?
4.
You didn't? 4? Okay, 4, and it was mostly water chemistry, or they were all water chemistry, I believe, yeah. Broken. Oh, yeah. Very important, the drain, Virginia. Let's see. And then Kathy and I met with the state engineer and did an inspection on a new pool that was going in on the west side of Ames there. And we learned a lot from him. That was a very valuable meeting with him. For tattoos, we've done all the inspections, 1 re-inspection. and the violations were all paper violations, so nothing dangerous happening out there. And then tanning, four tests administered at the department here, and we're getting going on those inspections. How far are we? I just checked the last. I think we've done more than four now, about 10 maybe, so about half we've done. Two violations, signage, nothing. You know, we're not burning people out there in Stornoway County. For enforcement, we have 7 outstanding time of transfer binding agreements and 1 overdue. 7 outstanding NOVs, 4 septic, 1 well, 1 is Crestview, and then 1 lead, and that'll go away when I transfer the cases over. We've had 6 complaints in 2015, and within the past 2 months, 1 was Crestview and 1 was Fernald. And Crestview was water. They're running out of water there. And then also they're hauling in water, which is not legal because you can't guarantee that it's potable water.
What was the surface water in Fernald? You
know? Just me, mostly neighbor wars, but they take the cat litter and make berms to keep the surface water from flowing into their yard. And so then the guy reciprocated by putting in his own little idea of surface drainage. I think it's their problem, not our problem, but they certainly like to involve us in their problems. You know, a day in Fernald, yeah, just another day in Fernald. And then grants to counties. Hey, this started up in 1987, and we are seeing some changes. They're increasing the grant amount or the amounts that we can offer for doing different chores. So well rehab and well plugging are increasing, as you can see. I won't read the numbers off. Cisterns are staying the same. And then education is doubling, which is nice. We can spend that. And they're very generous about what types of classes they'll cover. Equipment, bumping that up to 500, and those things. They'll cover boots and computer stuff and, you know, just anything to kind of help out the office a little bit. Advertising, we're bumping that up to 1,000, and arsenic testing. This is a new test that they're going to be covering starting in July. And there'll be $60 of administration, and then the actual lab cost, which is around $80. The abandoned building that we worked so hard on planning on burning, a control burn, it just automatically burns somehow. So, and I have, yeah, and it, wow. So I'm not going to go into that. But so that's one problem we don't have to worry about anymore because it is gone. Crestview update. DNR has issued a letter of noncompliance. So a couple of things that they need to do is they have to put a pressure gauge in for monitoring drawdown and static water levels to see if they're going to have enough water for that particular pump and they're set up there. And then they have to install a well vent, and they have to increase the finished water storage to maximum of average daily consumption, which surprises me. It seems to me it should be 1.5 at least for storage instead of just a daily daily usage capacity. But what they have right now is not sufficient, and that's why they're running out, and that's why they're hauling water in and just dumping it into the holding tank, chlorinating it and out. The other thing that they don't do is they are not testing their kits. Don't go high enough for the chlorine content, so they're getting too much chlorine in there, and they're not able to test that because their test kits don't go that high. Lots of problems over there. So that's just, you know, and that's kind of a DNR thing. And then the county is working, like the treasurer's office is working to get the junking titles and the certificates squared away so that they can move off all those empty trailers. And then we're working with them to get them off once they get all the paperwork in line. And then later this week we're going to meet DOT, DNR, and county to discuss what we can do. I think we're getting close to a point where we need to close these people down. I mean, I have been against that for many years, but this is getting out of hand. It's just getting out of hand.
Well, you gave them the notice of violation last fall.
Yes.
And you gave them until January to correct those.
Yes.
And now we met with him, in February or whenever it was, and mm-hmm. now here we are.
Yeah, and every time I call, he's got a good answer for why. You know, he's watching the kids this week or, you know. I'm going to recommend, and I don't know if the board is in agreement with this, but I'm going to recommend we close them down. It's just violation after violation. I think they're serious enough that we need to protect those people out there. It's
pretty bad.
It's very
really
bad.
Bad out there.
Yeah.
But I don't know how much authority the county has to go in and close them down.
Okay.
He's got a number of zoning violations,
mm-hmm.
and really what we can do is we can cite him on those violations and
well, maybe we should start fining
him,
and then
right.
he'll get
and
curious.
You can file those on a daily basis that he's not in compliance.
Okay.
But I would certainly think that the DNR would have more leverage if he's got an inadequate water supply for the tenants.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I would assume that they would be able to issue some sort of an injunction and come in and as opposed to the county, who can simply, all we can do is go in there and
well, they use words like non-compliance. They don't even use the word violation. So
right.
I don't think they're willing to do that, you know.
Yeah.
Just my two cents. So on the 11th, we'll talk about it. And I would be in favor of, at very least, issuing citations and start levying fines on them. Any input on that?
Where's this meeting going to be held at?
It's going to be held here.
What's that going to be for, to determine?
Just to see where we're at in compliance. And
well, we know they're not.
We haven't really heard from
well,
DOT before.
He's got a large number of mobile homes out there that over the course of years, people have abandoned, and then he's resold without the title. So there's no clear title to them.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't just haul them off and dispose of them until you figure out legally who owns them and if they've been abandoned. It's like a motor vehicle. You can't take a car to a junkyard and junk it unless you got a title to it. And it's the same way with these. So.
And he's got 13 empty ones.
Right.
And as the summer rolls around, the weeds go up, the animals move in, the mold moves in. You know, it gets really awful.
Yeah, and I don't know how many he's got out there that are occupied. I don't know how many tenants he actually has.
I don't know either.
But
55-ish trailers, yeah. And then he's also got that huge junk pile where he illegally burns there, too.
But if we don't make a recommendation, will the DNR, maybe they won't, maybe we need to make a recommendation that we close it down so that DNR will follow through with their, maybe the same thing.
Or, well, I think the county attorney will be at the meeting.
He will, yeah.
Well, he will. I don't think she's going to be back. She's at a conference. I think I'll check with Stephen.
Oh,
yeah.
Okay. Sorry.
I know he's still here. So we'll, we'll have to find out exactly what the county's got the authority to do. So
something needs to be done. It is pretty bad out there.
Oh, yeah. And it has been for a long time.
Yeah, long, long time.
Not so many trainings and meetings. Interagency review, Healthy Homes Conference down in Florida. A lot of that was lead, so, and I didn't realize we were quitting the lead grant until after I went down to that conference. Bloodborne pathogens, we have to take that training every year for the tattoo and the pool stuff. Oh, what else? And then I went to the arsenic training. Matt goes to the MAPS meetings. I attended the Slater Source Water Protection Planning session. Iowa Rural Water Association offers this to their members to help them figure out water protection. And Slater currently has, I think, two wells that they mainly use and a few abandoned ones that they have to get plugged. So our part of it is to go down and help them identify hazardous sources, abandoned wells, septic systems, and then, of course, they go to DNR for the Ust and Lust sites, and then someone works with the farmers for farming practices for water retention, and they talk about City Lagoon, things like that. So our main involvement then will be a little bit of a promotional campaign for our well plugging program. And so we help pay for their newsletter that goes out with our grant money. And then also to identify the systems that aren't up to snuff in and around that city. They said that they did a model for their zone of protection. And because it was flat, it was like a bullseye. It was like, you know, it wasn't a real fancy hydrologic model because it was boom, boom. You know, so that was that. So, but anyway, with the Grants of County's advertising money increasing, we'll be able to get involved in a few more of these source water protection things to promote our programs and hopefully spend that money down.
Okay.
Miscellaneous, we submitted the evaluations for the staff, and I talked to Mike Cox to see if conservation monitors for the blue-green algae in the different lakes. They do not, and we do not. So I know that, Eileen, you need to do that as far as public health needs to do that. If patients come in, you need to report that, or they ask that you report that anyway so that it can get a handle on it. County does not do any mosquito control. We got a call on that this morning. Absolutely none, not even at the parks, apparently. And then Hickory Grove Lake update, nothing. No more systems have been put in this spring because Nick has been busy doing other projects. So what that means, we will not lose money, but I will have to amend the budget so that I can use the money that I didn't use this year. I can use it next year. Okay.
How long is that money good for? A
couple more years. We're fine. But
is he going to get any in this year?
Yes, he is.
Okay.
Thank you. Any questions?
So what happens when you find arsenic in a well? What are you going to do?
That's a really good question. And I should have spoke about that a little bit. But they do have, it's like a reverse osmosis treatment, and it's point source is where they, where they want to treat it because you don't want to treat all of the water in the house. And that was the question. Is that on the agenda next? Can I just go to that?
Not next, but it's on there.
Oh, okay.
So don't get ahead of yourself.
Okay. So.
More to come. Okay.
And treat it for it, yeah.
Okay. Any questions for Margaret? Okay. Additional items. Next, we have the Iowa Department of Public Health recognition of service to Eileen Mutler and Heather Bobby.
So as we kind of discussed before, it's not an easy position being a public health director at any level. And to have to answer to being a hospital-based public health agency, answering to hospital governance as well as Board of Health governance, and then all of the hoops and hoopla that you have to jump through for every insurance company, every grant owner, every contractor, all of those things, she has come through it unscathed, I think. So not to scare Kyle off by any means, because it's very rewarding, but the department recognizes how difficult and all the hard work that goes into what you've done all of these years. So on behalf of the Iowa Department of Public Health, we present you with a certificate of appreciation and wish you the best in your retirement, Eileen.
I just want to say that I'm appreciative of all the information that I've gleaned over these last 5 years from Eileen and Heather also. I had the occasion to go around the state and meet with other supervisors, and every time I do that, I'm very glad that we're in a position that we can contract our public health service with a hospital. There's a lot of supervisors that are envious that Story County's in the position that they're in, and we've had a good relationship, I think, since 1984, right around there someplace with Mary Greeley, and hopefully we'll continue that, Kyle, with your leadership. So thanks again, Eileen. Okay. The next is a discussion and consideration of the agreement between the Story County Board of Health and Mary Gilley to provide a public health service to the community for FY16. And if you guys remembered what I just said, we really like having Mary Gilley do our public health. The only thing on there's some, and Eileen, you might have to speak to that. There's the amounts are actually blank on the, and I don't know if you guys have a copy of that, but the amounts of.
Right. The actual dollar amounts awarded to each of the aging resources, all the
right.
different areas, is to be determined later. I mean, it's when is
yeah.
the.
So the governor has 30 days after the end of session to approve the same
right.
budget. We don't have any reason to think that the amounts won't be the same.
Same.
Right.
So if you looked at that contract, those three items would be blank. There'd be no dollar figure in there because we don't know what those dollar figures are yet. But we're confident that Mary Greeley's not going to gouge the county.
Right. So. Right. And that dollar amount, once they award it, we don't have any
Correct.
Say, really, one way or the other.
Right. So I would need a motion to approve that contract services between the Board of Health and Mary Greeley.
So moved.
So moved.
And is there a second?
Second.
Got a motion and a second. Spec. That's an aye or a no.
Aye.
Kluge.
Aye.
Passion.
Arr.
Two. Aye. That passes. Thank you very much. The next is the discussion and consideration of arsenic testing. And that would be Margaret again.
Well, I'm just going to talk about it. Okay, so the grant will be covering arsenic testing now. About five years ago, Cerro Gordo County started doing a pilot test. They got some grant from CDC and from University of Iowa to test for arsenic. They found some high amounts, and it's mostly from the Lime Creek aquifer, which is not down here. But the Geology Service thinks that there's potential for arsenic in all the aquifers that we have, okay? And then in 2001, EPA changed the recommended level for private wells from 50 down to 10 parts per billion. So in saying that, you know, we've done some testing. We've done maybe a dozen or so, and we have found zero arsenic in Story County. However, some of the cities, like Huxley, they have had arsenic in their water before, and they blend it with lower levels so that they're within the contamination limits. So when I was at this arsenic training, IDPH asked us to ask our board to decide what level of testing you will provide. They are afraid that the places with high arsenic will use us as their time to change your filter testing kind of thing. And we don't want to waste our money on that, obviously. So I'm going to recommend that we can offer up to two tests per household per year. And that would be before and after the filter, if they have a filter. If they don't have a filter, then just the one, you know, from their tap that they would be drinking. And that way they wouldn't be, you know, constantly using us to be their water softener guy kind of deal.
Now, would this include incorporated areas? If you're, say, in Huxley and you're a resident in Huxley, the health department?
Only for private wells.
Okay.
Yeah.
Private wells only.
Yeah.
All right.
And so many of the houses now have the rural water, and so we wouldn't be testing that either. So I don't see that we'll be using this a lot. There won't be a lot of interest.
Okay. Is there a fee attached to the test?
No.
It's free.
Yeah. Well, it's covered by the grant, and we'll get $60 a well for
All
that.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
So, I mean, it's a money maker for us because we're going to be out there anyway testing for the bacteria and nitrate. So we'll just... Yeah. You know, catch a couple more samples. So it's a good deal for us. And then, you know, if we see a pattern, depth or something, some correlation with certain types of wells, then we could sort of ramp it up a little bit. But I think one a year per private well, or well, up to two, you know, before and after filter, or one per year.
Okay.
And we would actually recommend every 5 years retesting.
Okay. So we need to take action on that. So anybody have any other questions for Margaret on that? So if not, I would entertain a motion that the health department, environmental health department, agree to test private wells, residential wells, no more than twice a year. And
be covered by the grant.
To be covered by the grant.
Do you want, I guess, I wonder too, do you want to test those wells that aren't used for potable water?
Well, I mean, what would be the advantage in that? I mean,
well, the advantage would be more of a scientific study, you know, getting an idea if there is arsenic in our area. It is, you know, but it's not being used for human consumption. And I doubt arsenic affects animal health, does it? Or
could. On the other hand, we sometimes use arsenic medicinally.
Do you? Yeah. But I would imagine water levels, you know, they don't live long enough to get that cumulative effect that would finally cause cancer, I assume.
But the wells probably would be drawn off the same aquifer as the house would.
Yeah, but a lot of the houses will have rural water, and then livestock is on
well. Yeah, I guess for me, for now, we could include
livestock if they want it.
Yeah, if you wanted to check the county, I'd open it up for now.
Okay.
So is that a motion?
So moved.
Okay. We have a second?
We do, second.
Okay. We've got
a second.
Is there any further discussion? So that's going to
make sure that we keep a good record of this.
Yeah,
you know,
and
because
we have been tracking.
Yeah,
it.
Because if you do it like in another 5 years, it'll be again phenomenally fascinating to see whether it changes.
Yeah, and then actually the state requires us to track it on their private well tracking system, and that is an agreement of the grant, so they track it too. So it's double covered. Yep.
Good.
So we'll just leave it that your department will test private wells,
yes,
no more than twice a year for arsenic. Okay.
Sounds good.
All right.
Thank you.
Yep.
Thanks.
And all those in favor of that, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, same sign. That passes. There you go, Margaret. And you have to stay there because you're up again.
Got one more.
One more. Discussion and consideration of government entity permit fees.
Yeah.
Margaret Jane.
So this came up. ISU said, hey, you're not supposed to charge us. We're ISU for, you know, septic permit. And, well, you know, I spent hours out there, and it seems, I don't know, is that fair that they don't have to pay for you know, coring every inch of their land? It's a lot of work.
Typically, I don't think the county charges fees to other governmental entities for, you know, in any service, I don't, you know, but
we have in the past. We've done some charging and we've let some go. So I guess you guys just need to vote on it one way or the other. Doesn't affect our budget.
Okay.
That's the thing, like with well permits, we still have to collect the DNR fee, but then we wouldn't be collecting ours.
Okay. Well, I guess I don't have any huge reservations one way or the other. I mean, if you're spending, you know, a fair amount of time out there, and I don't know that it's.
We do what, maybe two septics a year and a couple of.
What do we charge now?
Well, it's $240 for septic, and $150 for well, and that includes DNR. It's not going to break them.
What other public entities might this come up with?
Ames.
City of Ames.
And
Well, all the cities for that. Well,
any
not a lot. But
like if a city builds a new building, they put GLOs in or something like that.
And they want you to expect them.
Mm-hmm.
And they would expect you to do it for free.
Mm-hmm. And see, I don't know, what are they reciprocating with? What do we get for free, Paul?
That's
oh, what's fair is fair. Yeah.
True.
You know, what are they giving us? I don't know.
Can't come up with anything off the top of my head.
No, you can't.
Education,
yeah.
Sports, riots in the spring.
Yeah, that's true.
Oh, golly, that's a really good example. Pool.
Well, yeah, we don't necessarily have a policy one way or the other on it.
We do not. Mm-mm. But how much did the check for pools come in at? Yeah, but it was like 900 or something like that.
So,
it was
so
a lot of money.
We're charging the city of Nevada and the city mayor, the DNR is,
yeah,
for the pool inspections, public health, right? For the inspection, so yeah.
It is. Between
and
the
you're
cities.
Inspecting pools at Iowa State, I would assume.
Yes. And we would be doing all that for free? I don't think so.
Makes sense to me. I don't necessarily know that we need to take any action on it. I mean, if it's the consensus of the board that you charge them, and if it looks like it's going to be a problem, then we can, you know, then we can put a policy together.
Okay.
Or if you charge them and they complain about it, tell them to come to this board or the board of supervisors and make their case.
Okay. So generally, so it's kind of an unwritten policy then that we will charge. All
yeah, we
state
do charge.
And municipalities for services by the health department.
Yeah, I don't think it would be any different anything else because we're like Matt said, you know, we're charging for the pool inspections anyway, and we go to the university inspect. Kathy, you say three different pools.
Mm-hmm.
So why would we not, you know, why would we not expect to be reimbursed for?
Yeah. And we do Mary Greeley Pool and city pools. Yeah, so.
And nobody squawked about it.
No, well, they squawked that it's high because it is high, but that's set by the state.
Hey, you get what you pay for.
How many times do you check the pools?
Well, once, unless we have to go back.
Oh, just once a year.
Or, yeah, that's the requirement.
Yeah, my suggestion would be the next time it comes up, just charge them the fee like you normally do.
Okay.
If somebody says, well, we don't want to pay this, and they say, well, then you'll have to come to the board and ask for an exception, and
okay,
they can come make their case.
Yeah, and you can say when they say, well, mm-hmm, you're not supposed to charge municipalities, just say, well, I checked with my Board of Health, and we say, yeah, we do. So.
Okay. I'm done, right?
Are you done? Yeah, I think so, yeah. Okay, any staff comments? Any board comments? I'll let you guys know that we had a meeting last Friday with some of the hospital trustee, board of trustees at Story County Medical Center, and they showed us their plans for the expansion. They're going to move their clinic that's attached to the old hospital here in town out to the new facility. So it'll just about double the footprint of what they've got out there now.
Wow.
Oh, good. What are they going to do with the old
one? Well, they're looking, so if you've got anybody that's looking for some space, they'd be more than willing to sit down and talk to them. Their fear is that they're not going to get anybody interested in it, and they'll have to spend $500,000 to demolish it and clear the site. So I think they're going to start construction, is it maybe this fall, I think, yet, is what their hope is. So
Are they making money?
Yeah. Yeah, they're actually actively, I think, recruiting for another physician for their clinic, which will make maybe, I think they said six. This will be the sixth physician that they're looking for their clinic.
Wow.
So, the president of the trustees, he's been on the board of trustees, Dave Anderson from here in Nevada, has been on there for 25 or 30 years. He said it's a lot better relationship now than it was 10 or 15 years ago with Mary Greeley and McFarland Clinic. He said they've even got some clinic doctors that use their facility for some of their services. They've got, you know,
I do know that.
Cardiac rehab. They do a lot of that. They do a lot of skilled care. Yep. So, yep. So, and that's all I've got. And I'd take a motion for adjournment.
So moved.
Second.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. We're adjourned.
Great.